Last week on Jack Unmasked.
Played against Gordy, he'd come into our building and you just knew Gordy was there, just with the atmosphere of Gordy Howe's with the team tonight. Gordy got a hat trick of me one night when he was in front of my net. Nobody would give him a cross check because they knew the battle was just starting. It's Gordy. And guess where he sat? Right beside me. So I sat beside him for two games. We ended up beating him 4-2. So I'm sitting there looking at all these fantastic hockey players across the way, and I'm sitting beside Mr. Hockey, and I said, you know what? I'm never putting the pads on again.
Well, welcome to the Jack Norris Podcast. We like to call it Jack Unmasked. Hockey stories from the 60s and 70s. Proudly brought to you by the Simply Grounded Coffee Gallery in downtown Delisle. We hope you enjoy reminiscing about hockey as much as we do. So, without further ado, let's chat with Jack. Okay, well, we're back here with the Jack Norris Podcast, Jack Unmasked, after the Easter spring break that we took off. Jack, how did you enjoy your Easter break?
Oh, it was very good. We didn't do too much. We just hung around, but weather wasn't that warm. But, you know, we had a couple nice days.
You know what I did, right?
No.
Well, the spring break, you do.
Oh, yeah. I know what you did. You're the only guy who can afford to go to Hawaii.
I'm going to cut that out. Finally, the tables turn. I get the nice warm weather, and you got to 25, 30 below in April.
I know. It was cold a couple of nights. It was 25, 26, I think two nights in a row or something. It was really, really cold here. But you know what? Next day, I haven't gone through the long, cold winter that everybody's gone through here. We're down in Arizona, but you know, I didn't really mind it because you get up in the morning, it's not bad going to coffee and you're sitting in a warm place. And, you know, by the time you get out at 10 o'clock, it's not too bad. So
I got to actually face one of my fears. You know what that was, right?
No.
Well, I went to Hawaii and I went in the water. So could you imagine what it is?
Sharks.
Yeah, sharks.
Oh,
yeah.
Did you see one?
No, but there was a shark attack while we were there.
Wow, was there?
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, not too far from us. A 12-foot tiger shark chewed off a guy's leg, and we never told the kids, and we went surfing 2 days later.
Oh, you're welcome to it, not me. I wouldn't have any part to do with that.
That was always I thought it was my destiny to get eaten by a shark, but we made it back. That was
that was good.
That was pretty good.
Yeah.
So today we're going to talk about, it was 1980, you're playing with the Montreal Old Pros, and you ended up with serious medical condition where you had to go to the hospital for some time, and we're going to get into that, but why don't you just start off with your experience with the Montreal Canadiens and the organization, and we'll go from there.
Well, I was in 1970. I went on the draft from Chicago to Montreal. So I spent 1 year with the Voyageurs down there, and it was in Montreal's training camp with all the big name guys, and it was okay. I played on John Ferguson's team. They have seven different teams they have there all throughout training camps, and they had 20 guys in each team. So I was on Fergie's team. Turned out well, but I never made the team. So I got to tell you the story that happened throughout the year. I was in the American League, and I was having a good year with the team, and I was one of the top goalies, if not the top. Gump Worsley was the goaltender for Montreal, so he got traded to the Rangers, I think it was. So I saw him one day in the rink the day he got traded, and he said to me, he's a kid, come here. So I went over and he says, I got some good bad news. I says, what's that? And he says, I just got traded. He says, but I think you're in. You should be in with the Canadiens because they got to be calling you because you're having such a good year. And I said, oh man, that'd be kind of neat if that happens. Anyway, I waited. He says, go home, sit by your phones. Never rang and never rang, never rang. So the day went on. Next day, I got a game, and my backup, Phil Mir, was not there. And I said to the guys, I said, like, where's Phil Mir? Is he not backing me up tonight, or what's happening? He says, oh, he went up to the Canadiens. I says, you're kidding. Yeah, okay. I said, well, that's fine. Anyway, when that happened, I was anti-Montreal. I didn't like Montreal at all because I thought I should have got called up. But I didn't.
Phil was French too, wasn't he?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And you got to be French or close to it to make that team. And then that meant Rogge and Phil Mir were the two goalies.
Mm-hmm.
Rogge Vachon.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. They brought Phil up to back up Rogge then, didn't they?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So Gump went to New York. And so I went and sat in the bar with Gump anyway when he told me all this. And Gump liked to drink his beer. He sat right in the one on the bar stool right against the wall. And he called me, come over here, kid, have a beer. So I went over and had a beer with Gump.
But a beer tastes better when you play hockey.
Oh, yeah, way better than it does like today.
That's right.
he called me and said, told me what happened. He says, you're going to get called, and never happens. So that's what, that was my episode with the Gumper. I knew him all through training camp, and we got along well and everything else, but he was quite a little goaltender. Got traded that year to L.A., and so anyway, time went on, and then the rest of the career was WHA and stuff like that. This thing with Montreal, I come back here, and I got a phone call from Montreal when I was about 37 years old, probably, to come and play with the Montreal Old Pros.
You'd have been closer to 40 when it was 1980.
No,
Didn't you retire at 36?
33.
Oh, at 33. Yeah, so you're right. 36, 37. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I started playing for them, and it was okay, like fun and all that. And we had a good lineup. Like Rocket Richard was our ref. And remember, we used to sit in the bus. Everybody kind of had their back row. All the guys sat in the back, most of the team, because they all liked to drink their beer all day and carry on. But I couldn't have a beer when you're playing goal. You got to have your good eyes. And so I sat beside the Rocket. He was our ref. And then Henry Richard sat in the front seat. And old Eddie Shack was at the back with the guys. And
having beer.
Having a beer, yeah.
Yeah, that'd be Eddie.
J.C. Trombley. He's kind of sat near me up towards the front. He wasn't a big drinker at that time. And Ab McDonald and Gary Peters and Normie Ullman, Andy Bathgate, Billy Harris, all a bunch of big-name hockey players. They wouldn't all be there every time, but they had certain guys come every trip, so they'd always feel the team.
I'm sure you could hear Eddie Shack from the back anyways.
Oh, God, you could hear him 100 miles away.
Yeah.
That was all going on. So anyway, we were supposed to go one weekend. They're coming again, so they phoned me up, said, would I go to Melville to meet the team, and supposed to play a game in Melville, and I think Yorkton the next night, then I don't know where the next night after that.
Oh, I thought for some reason you guys were in southern Alberta for a while, like Lethbridge or something.
Not on that trip.
Oh, that was a different trip.
So I phoned Gary Peters. He was going also, and he's living in Regina. Phoned him. No, not Peters. I mean Billy Hickey.
Okay.
Billy Hickey was the guy down in Regina. So I went down Regina. I was driving down, and I had a terrible, terrible headaches just all the way, and my head was just so... just like gonna thought I was gonna blow up.
But you had that all summer.
Probably.
You had headaches and sore back all summer.
Yeah.
I remember that year. You were like laying in the living room always, and you were in pain for quite a while, actually.
Probably.
Yeah.
On the way down, I just didn't know what I wanted. I fall asleep, or I thought, well, I'm gonna pull over to the side of the road and just see if I have a little nap. So I pulled over and couldn't sleep. So anyway, went to Regina and picked up Billy Hickey, and we drove over to Melville in his car, get to Melville, and walking down from the one end of the rink to the other end, and I get to that dressing room, and they open up the door, and I just got that smell of sweat, and that hit me, and I had a whiteout. All I seen was white. So they took me to the hospital. Woke up. They asked me what happened. I said, I don't know. I just passed out. So they says, well, we're gonna knock you out for the night. And they said, we're going to put you asleep, and then morning we'll decide what we're going to do. So morning came, and they woke me up and says, we're going to take you to Regina by ambulance. Do you want a nurse? And I says, I don't. I wasn't very good. I wasn't in my right mind. I don't care what you do. Do whatever you want. So I get to Regina, and anyway, he was in there. And I remember sitting on a bed beside a little doctor lady, and she was asking me all kinds of questions about what was wrong. Come to the conclusion, they said, pretty sure I had an aneurysm, and it had broke in my back of my brain. They had to get me all calmed down, cooled down, and back to normal, and so I couldn't get too excited, and I had company that come in, and they were trying to get me all excited, and that they said after, don't have people like that, because you're getting too excited again. We don't want you. We got to let you relax. So anyway, I relaxed for 2 weeks, I think it was, and then they come in night before the operation. I remember a lady walking in with her notepad, and she said, we're going to operate tomorrow morning, and Dr. Wall or Dr. something is going to do the operation, and she says, probably 8 hours long. Anyway, they says, have you got all your financial arrangements in order? And I says, well, I guess so, yeah. Wife's going to, she'll be able to do all that. You guys were, how old were you guys at the time?
I'd have been 10.
Yeah, you were 10 years old, and you guys stayed at my brother's place on their farm, sleeping in the garage because they were building a new house.
Okay, yep.
Anyway, they operated next day, and the operation took 9.5 hours.
Oh, wow.
Come in the back of my brain. They took a piece right out of my head right here. They pulled the bone.
Yeah, you can still see the scar.
Yeah, and they took that and put it in a fridge the whole time they were operating. And they operated from there around to the back of my head to where this leakage was on a vessel or something. And it was getting down into my back, and that's why my back was aching. The blood was dripping down there. He operated, and I'm right out. After this operation, I am in another world. I had no idea where I was. I didn't know anything. I knew my wife, and I didn't know where I was. I just didn't know nothing. My brain was gone. I was laying in the bed, and my wife was... She had called her mom and dad in Arizona and said to B, Deanna's mom, she said, you better come home. My husband's got an aneurysm. So she said, we'll leave this afternoon. So they had to pull their trailer home. Anyway, they got home, and they're out in the parking lot with their trailer the first night. So they drove it home the next day, and then they come back. The day after the operation, I was laying there, and the doctor says, talk to him. So she says, oh, I can't. No. He says, I'll call him. So he hollered my name, Jack. And he asked me a complicated question about some figures, and I had no idea what the answer is, but I'm trying so hard to give him an answer, thinking so hard on this simple question he asked me, and I give him an answer, and the doctor says, he's going to be okay. And I was laying there, I rolled over, and her dad was walking up, and I remember saying, hi, Andy. And when the doctor heard that, he says, he's going to be okay. So anyway, after that, we spent another week in the hospital recuperating, and Deanna stayed at Billy Hickey's place the whole time for a month or 3 weeks, whatever. And we were packing up to come home, and I said to Deanna, do you know where you're going? She says, oh yeah. He says, and I said, I think you're going the wrong way. I don't understand this, where we're heading at all. I have no idea where you're going.
Oh.
So it's a long story. We drove home. I had no idea where we were going. I had no idea what the country looked like, no idea which direction we're going. We get to the farm, and I recognized the farm, but I was in cloud nine. I just had no idea about anything. So my brother came over one day to see me, and I was going to put some oil in the one little tractor sitting in the yard, and I had transmission oil instead of motor oil.
Oh, okay.
And he says, don't do that. He says, just leave everything alone. We wanted to go for coffee one day, and I said to my wife, I'd like to go for coffee today. She said, well, I'll drive you. She said, you're not driving yourself.
Yeah.
You get lost. We drove up to the coffee shop, and everybody's so happy to see me. And then we had my old friend Skippy Creek and his wife come to visit us there shortly after on a Sunday afternoon. And when I had that operation, I couldn't even talk because I'd start talking to you, telling you a story, and I had no idea what I was talking about. And I would lose touch of what I said.
Okay.
And I'd just sit there and just stare at you and saying, I had no idea what I said. And Skippy would be looking at me like waiting for me to finish. And I was in twilight, another world.
Yeah.
Had no idea what was even said. So after they left, I said to my wife, I said, don't ever leave me alone like that again with somebody because I can't handle it.
Oh, okay.
Just can't.
Yeah.
That spring work come on and I couldn't see it. I had no idea what it was even going to do. So I had to ask my nephew, Brent, if he would seed my crop. And I apparently we had the grain ready, or I don't know what happened. I have no idea. But he seeded the crop anyway. And then towards the summer, I got a little bit better, start to get my marbles back and do a bit of thinking, and by the time harvest come around, I was okay to do my work. But that whole summer took a lot of rebuilding. I built myself from nothing to the way I am today, which I'm able to remember these stories to tell.
Yeah.
At that time, I couldn't have told you my name, let alone a story.
Oh, yeah.
It was just, I was gone. So it was very sad, but the way it turned out was quite miraculous. It all worked out good, and you know, it's just a one of those things that work. You know what? When I was having that operation and they came in the night before, the lady that put the cut my hair all off for the operation, she said, this is a 50-50 chance you'll make it or break it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And I was on the good side, thank God.
Yeah, I mean, you could have even just, I mean, could have just had brain damage, come out of there and not remember anything. And I mean, it's obvious that you have your memory because we're doing this podcast and you're telling your stories, and unless you've just been making them up the whole time.
Well, I don't think it's possible to make it up because
no.
I've got good memories of those days, and I can remember back when I was 6 years old to the farm. It just,
yeah,
for some reason it's just worked out good. So,
well, sure, Grant used to hit you with a pitchfork.
Oh, everything.
Like, the obvious question is, because I think it was episode 3 where you did the slap shot, the Bobby Hall slap shot to the forehead. Do you think, like, playing with no mask or taking that slap shot to the head, you've always took other shots, had anything to do with it? Or do you just think it turned out to be one of those incidents that it is what it is?
I don't know whether they're lying or not, but you can ask doctors about, you know, like the headaches I had. I say, has that got anything to do with hockey from all the hits I've taken? And everyone will say, no. I often think it's got something to do with it. I mean, I've taken some terrible hits.
Yeah.
Because I had no mask and some terrible, terrible hits. But doctors claim no.
I mean, you could hit your head somewhere else, but I think if you'd ask a doctor today that's involved in sports medicine, they might have said it might have come out of it. I mean, it was only 3 or 4 years after you retired.
What they're doing right now, there's a story I heard Gary Peters was telling me down in Toronto where they're calling anybody that played back in those days. If they want to go down and get examined, they will examine you. They'll pay your way and hotel and everything.
Oh, yeah.
And they will examine you for 2 or 3 days on these machines. And then, but you got to go back again maybe 2 or 3 months later to do something else. And Gary said, do you want to go? And I said, well, I don't know if I do or not. You know.
Throw some tickets into a Leafs game and maybe.
Well, yeah, whatever. Blue Jays or something.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Just the way it all turned out has been good. I can honestly say I think I've got 9 lives.
So if we kind of tie it all together, because last week we talked about your last game and the importance of it. So just sort of refresh everybody with how your last game with Gordie Howe plus, you know, the situation we just went through, it meant even more, right?
Well, you know, after we got back and a couple of years later, this Gordie Howe thing come up. And I was just talking to Gary today, and we were just talking about this. And he says, when I called you, I didn't realize what we're getting into. And so, yeah, it's turned out really well because I played the first game and a little shaky, but next game I played. And that's when I got the star of the game with all these NHL guys. Gordy set me aside me and all that. And that's when I hung up the pads, was right there.
Going through the whole experience you did with the aneurysm and coming back and being able to actually physically play and do well and then sit beside Gordie Howe is actually what meant more to you than really coming, because you came through so much. It wasn't just like, oh, I'm going to play again and quit.
Well, it was, because when I've met all these guys, like I go back, Jean Beliveau was probably the first one I ever met in Montreal's training camp that year. And then Gordie Howe, I played against him and met him later on and played with Bobby Hall, Stan Mikita, Andy Bathgate, all these big name stars. And to think back, when you think of that and you put it all together, saying, man, that's pretty good when you can say I met all these guys and played against them, because they are the cream of the crop. They were the best hockey players in the world at the time.
Oh yeah,
pretty phenomenal the way it turned out.
Well, thanks for sharing that story there, Jackson. Next week, do you know what we're talking about?
I have no idea.
I didn't either, actually. We forgot to talk about it before, didn't we?
Yeah. I'd like to talk with Gary Peters someday, if that'll work into your schedule. Whatever, Gary Peters got a lot of stories to tell. And I got some stories to talk about him. And I talked to him today, and he said he'd be willing to do it in a second. So maybe next week we should.
Oh, so maybe our first actual NHL alumni guest comes on the Jack Norris podcast. We may try to get Gary Peters on for next week.
That'd be great.
Maybe we'll ask Gary what he wants to talk about. Because, I mean, there's no point of us asking him a certain question if we'll ask him maybe one of his favorite stories.
Yeah, he's got a lot of stories to tell.
In fact, Gary's been heavily involved with kids sport for a lot of years.
Yeah, and that's what we're in the process right now, is they're getting out of kids sport. They're not doing it this year because Gary's doctors told him to slow down.
Yeah.
Because he's had a heart problem and other things. So the doctor says, get away from it. So they're quitting kids sport. He was the backbone of the whole thing.
Yeah, he's put a ton of hours into that.
Yeah, we're putting the thing on in Purdue. Talked to Gary Day, and Gary says, absolutely, if they want to do that, be perfect.
Let's do that. We'll reach out to Gary Peters, see if we can get him on next week. And if not, well, we got lots we could bring up anyway.
So. You betcha. I'd love to do that.
Okay, awesome. Well, thanks, Jackson, for the podcast, and we'll talk to you next week.
Good. Talk to you then.
Okay, you bet. Bye. Well, that ends episode 11 of Jack Unmasked, where we learn about the ordeals that Jack went through with the aneurysm and how that all ties back to episode 10 when, coming back from everything that he had just went through, the struggles and everything, to get back on the ice and actually play his last game with and sitting beside Gordie Howe. If you would like to be notified of the next podcast, which comes out every Friday, go to www.nccag.ca. Click on the podcast tab, enter your email, and you'll be notified of the next podcast, which comes out every Friday. Until we talk to you next week, thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
I thought I was going to blow up. And I get to that dressing room and they open up the door and I just got that smell of sweat. Down I went, I had a whiteout. Pretty sure I had an aneurysm and it had broke. After this operation, I am in another world. I have no idea where I was. And the doctor says, he's gonna be okay. She said, this is a 50-50 chance you'll make it or break it.